For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all of those joining us live on the interweb, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Despite what Mandy just said, it is not Drew Mandel as your host. It is a Dave Minuk takeover. And I'm joined with, of course, with Ezzy Ginsberg. So it's the Minuk and Ginsberg show today.
What's up, Dave?
Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of Jets talk, some Moose talk, some Ice talk. We've got the whole local Manitoba scene covered for folks today on today's show. So let's give it started with how you do it, Ezzy. Have you survived today's monsoon, which unfortunately is covering up all the potholes and making it treacherous to be driving?
I was driving down Keniston, turning onto Cordon, and there is a pot. I didn't see the pothole because it was full of rain, and it had to have been at least 6 inches deep. Like, it was crazy. So I don't know how the city of Winnipeg hasn't filled that in yet, but yeah, this is great hockey weather. As you mentioned, Dave, Ice won last night. They've got game two coming up tonight. I mean, nobody's going to be doing anything outside here in Winnipeg and across Manitoba, because it's basically like you're walking down the street, and if it's not ice, it's puddles and potholes. So, you know, it's a great day to stay in and talk a little hockey, right?
Absolutely. The Moose are also in action later tonight there in Rockford, as Genghis Ken points out in the chat. So I believe he tweeted at us or Instagrammed us and said he's going to be at the Rockford game and at the Milwaukee game tomorrow. So he's doing the old Moose doubleheader there on their final road trip of the regular season, tuning up for what they hope to be a long playoff run. And the Jets are back in Winnipeg. They all have a practice scheduled for 11 o'clock. They were supposed to practice yesterday. They took the day off instead. So I guess we'll start with the local NHL club, Ezzy. I mean, they were officially...
Before we start, though, Dave, you mentioned this to me this morning when I first came over. I didn't get a haircut. Blake at the Lake is saying, nice haircut. I actually haven't got a haircut in about a month, but I'll take any compliment I can get, because I certainly don't get them from Naomi. So any compliments I'll get, but it's not a haircut. I guess it's just, you know, and maybe I'm slimming down a little bit.
Definitely. Maybe you did, maybe you did something. It definitely looked a little different today. Maybe it was the way you spiked it. I don't know.
Intermittent fasting. That's what I've been doing, Dave.
There you go. Ezzy, if you need for all fitness tips, we're going to be doing an Illegal Curve fitness show later on at 11:01 once this show.
By the way, just as an aside, sorry, I keep hijacking you.
That's all good,
Dave, but I am all for Hal Johnson and Joanne McLeod. I'm not sure if you saw that, Dave, but there's a big push online to get those two, of course, of body break fame. In the Canada Sports Hall of Fame. So
I'm all for sure.
That was such a big part of our childhoods, right?
Yeah. And their work is just about making Canadian kids healthier. I mean, it couldn't have been like more important for the entire nation. I mean, they're, I don't know them obviously, but you're right. It's something you grew up with, and I think they're pretty good people. And I think
they follow me on Twitter. No big deal.
Hashtag no big deal. All right. Well, let's get back into something called the Winnipeg Jets. They're practicing today, but they've officially been eliminated, of course. So, you know, as it's a little early to be doing a postmortem, of course, because there still are, four games left on the schedule here at home. But it seemed like that was the rage on Thursday in advance of the game against Carolina, because, the reality set in Wednesday night when Vegas came back and beat Washington and in overtime, and that eliminated Winnipeg. We thought it wouldn't be until Dallas played in Calgary the next night, or if
I think there was some confusion, right, Dave? Because I don't think people necessarily knew that Dallas and Vegas had one game left against each other. So I think people didn't factor that in, right? I know you did, and we did, but I think that's why there was some confusion. People thought that the Jets were still mathematically in it, but then when you factor in that one of those teams was going to get 2 points, then the Jets couldn't catch up.
That's right, exactly. And so
Vegas is kind of done right now. We're not even sure if Robin Leonard's going to come back.
That was very weird.
It was weird, For those who don't know, there were some mixed reports,
There was a mixed report. One reporter said that Leonard is done for the season. He's going to have season-ending surgery. And then when head coach Peter DeBoer was asked about it, he said, no, today's a maintenance day, and I expect him to be at practice tomorrow. So either the head coach doesn't know what's going on, which is not a good sign. Vegas seems like a gong show. Like, it's just, and I know that nobody in the chat is going to be upset that Vegas is having issues, of course, because there seems to be a very healthy rivalry.
With no sympathy.
Winnipeg and Vegas and the way Vegas has gotten players and stuff like that. So I don't think anybody's going to be too upset. But anyways, let's focus on the Winnipeg Jets here in today's show, or to start today's show at least, as. And I guess the question is, what are your thoughts now that the team is officially eliminated? We obviously knew that it was inevitability, but now it is official. They've got four games left, but of course they really don't mean much.
Right. That road trip really couldn't have gone any worse, could it have, Dave? Like, you lose all four games, and yeah, I mean, they were in it, you know, for a while against the Carolina Hurricanes, but as you documented on the postgame show, I wasn't on the postgame show, but you and Drew were, and I mean, Eric Comrie stood on his head, right?
Yeah.
He faced a lot of rubber, a super disappointing road trip, but I honestly didn't think, even if the Jets would have won like three or four, Dave, here on this road trip, it was still going to be really tough, right? Like, you're 10 points back of the Dallas Stars, and the Dallas Stars really don't seem to want to clinch a playoff spot. It gets ridiculous, right? Like, they lost those two games in Alberta, but I mean, it's theirs. I mean, at this point, if the Stars don't get that second wild card spot, it's going to be an absolute shocker, considering that, you know, Vegas is in all sorts of trouble, you know, with their goaltending, and just, you know, there's only four games left for them, right? Like, they just don't have a lot of games. So even if they win out, they're going to need Dallas to essentially lose the majority of their remaining games, right? So yeah, a very disappointing road trip, but you know, in a way, I think for Jets fans, you know, it's good that the Jets are officially eliminated, because you knew there was such a small chance, you know, a week ago that, you know, you were going to make the playoffs, considering Dallas was so far ahead. So, I mean, I'm not that surprised, you know, that the Jets, you know, I'm a little bit surprised that they lost all four of these games. Like, I actually thought, you know, going into the Carolina game, considering that at that point they knew they were mathematically eliminated, and look, they had a really good start. And you know, I know you guys must have talked a lot about Kyle Connor, like what a beautiful goal by Connor. And he's obviously motivated, Dave, to hit 50 goals, but I think he's also, you know, motivated to finish the season well for not only himself, but the team. Right. So, I mean, we're going to see, you know, a lot of Dylan Sandberg. I mean, based on what Dave Lowry said, I don't know how many call-ups we're going to see, right? Like, you've talked about this before, Dave, like, why aren't you calling up a guy like Leon Gavanke? Like, why aren't you giving Mikael Burden a start? I realize that he's up with the Jets now because of the you know, the injury or the sickness, I guess, whatever you want to call it, to mm-hmm. Connor Hellebuyck right now. But
yeah,
I'm not sure with four games left why you don't play, like, use some of those recalls. Like, what's the point? You're not going to the playoffs. So, you know, people say, well, what's the point in, you know, giving a guy an addition? Well, it's because the opportunity is there, right? Like, you're not going to have this opportunity once the regular season is over. So we'll see what happens. It looks like, you know, for tomorrow's game against the Avalanche, we're not going to see, you know, any recalls, you know, aside from Sandberg, I guess, if you want to call that, because his recall status was changed, right? But
that's right.
Yeah, I think at this point, I'd like to see some of those younger Moose players get a game or two. Like, why not? Give me a reason why not.
No, I mean, you're right. As we talked about it on Thursday's show, and the truth is that, I mean, the Jets have only two regular recalls left. They've obviously reused one on Morgan Barron. Now they've used one on Dylan Sandberg. So conceivably, those players, of course, will be up with the big club for the remainder of the season. But they do have two, you know, regular recalls, and they can make emergency recalls. I mean, the truth is, what the threshold is for emergency recalls seems to be, you know, unknown. So, I mean, if you have to say, like, we have an uncertainty, okay, that gives you the latitude to make an emergency recall, then they could do it if they need be. Now, Dave Lowry, as you said, as he talked about this on Thursday morning after morning skate, and he essentially said, we're going to roll with the lineup we've got. And there's pros and cons. And I went into that on Thursday's show, and I said, you know, to me, there's a if you're going to bring these guys up and not play them more than 5 minutes, then there's no value, because this is going to be a busy week. Moose play on Tuesday, Jets play on Wednesday, Moose play on Thursday, Jets play on Friday, Moose play on Saturday, Jets play on Sunday. So, I'm going to be at Canada Life a lot. But more importantly, it could be very taxing. And like I said, you know, I just think from a analysis perspective, from learning, because this is all about what the Jets are going to do heading into this offseason, right? It's all about evaluating what you have, doing a full, I think that's what most people in the chat are going to call for. And most Jets fans and most people, most analysts are going to say, like, you have to do a full analysis from top to bottom on this organization, find out where your limitations are, figure out where you need to make changes. And I think part of that is making an informed decision. And I, like I said, I don't think you need to do it for a Ville Heinola because you know what you have. I don't think you need to do it with a David Gustafson. Although, again, he has only played like two periods this season in the NHL, but he's had a very good AHL season. So I'm not concerned about him. But if you wanted to, that's fine. But Jeff Malott, who's only played the one game, 23 goals in the AHL with the Moose. He's been one of their best players. So you may want to give him another look. And you may want to give Leon Gavanke a look because you haven't seen what he's been able to bring. And maybe a Johnny Kovacevic. There's the other guy who's gotten four games in at the NHL level. You've seen what he can bring. I'm of the opinion that he could be a 6-7, you know, on this team next year and, you know, fill that. I think he can be higher, but I mean, potentially start as a 6-7 for this team and not really have to worry. Because, of course, he isn't waiver exempt and Jeff Malott will need a new contract. But I just think, like, you need to do certain evaluations. You don't need to bring them all up, but just create more information for yourself. Say, okay, this is what Leon Gavanke can do at the AHL. This is what, you know, we gave him two games in the NHL against, you know, Colorado. Okay, he's not going to play against Colorado, but against, you know, Philadelphia and who do they play after Philly? On Friday night, they play, I know they play Seattle to end the season. Is it Calgary?
James, yeah.
Yeah, so you play them against, you know.
Sorry, I was my chubby fingers were stuck and I couldn't get the unmute.
Yeah, no, it's all good. But the point is that you give this guy a shot against the Flames team and you see what he can bring. How can he box out? How can he do this? How can he do that? And then you can say, okay, you know, we saw him at the AHL. We know what he can do. Let's see him at the NHL level. And again, like I said, the concern isn't with the left side guys, A, because in the case of Heinola, you know what he can do at the NHL level. Or in the case of Chisholm, he's coming off an injury, so you want to let him play in the AHL. And B, he's waiver exempt, so you can bring him up next year. You don't have to worry about it. So I think you just have to be able to do this where you're going to be able to make – I mean, you're not doing this next season saying, oh, we'll do this in the exhibition. Because the exhibition is glorified, like it's nothing. It doesn't mean anything.
No, scrimmages.
Yeah, I mean, you have one team, like, you know, for the Oilers, they'll come here, they'll bring Bakersfield Condors, right? Like that's who they're bringing on the road.
It's pretty simple. It's not complicated. You have this opportunity to see players that, you know, you wouldn't have seen if you were – in a playoff spot or you were close to a playoff spot, right? So use those opportunities. What I'm also going to really be interested to see here as we, you know, approach the end of the regular season for the Jets. Well, the end of the regular season for everybody, the end of the season for the Jets is how quickly, you know, could we possibly see, you know, the firing of the entire coaching staff or, you know, some coaches. Like, I agree with you going back to what you said about the full audit. I think, you know, if you're Mark Chipman and you're the True North ownership group, like you're looking at everything right now. You're not just looking at coaching. You're looking at scouting. You're looking at, you know, the culture of this team, the leadership group of this team, everything. Like, I think Kevin Sheveldayoff will be the general manager. Not that, you know, my opinion really means anything. I mean, you know, the opinion is that really matters is Mark Chipman, obviously, right? But I don't think he's going anywhere. But I do think, you know, you're going to see a change in the coaching staff. Could that mean, you know, everybody? It's possible, Dave, but I'm really curious to see like how quickly, you know, like could it happen the day after the last game, that Jets Kraken game? Could you see the Jets coaching staff fired? I personally don't think it's going to take a long time. Like, I don't think it's going to take, you know, 3 weeks after the season for that decision to be made. I could be wrong, but you know, I get the, you know, the strong opinion that you're going to see, you know, a few guys get let go shortly after the season ends. And again, I could be wrong, that I have no inside knowledge, but that's kind of, I guess, what I'm expecting.
Well, I mean, and that seems to be the big talking point right now, right? It's that idea of systems and whether the Jets are playing any, and if they are, why are the players not buying into it? Because it sure seems like when you see the outside analysis, that does seem to be the biggest criticism of this coaching staff. And look, it's not like it's been a day. It's not like it's been a year. You know, this group has been together for a long time. And so as a result, you know, does the message get stale and does the messenger get stale? Right. And so you have to think, if it's not working, and it clearly isn't, and you're spending, it's not like, again, you're not the Arizona Coyotes that are at the league minimum, you know, and really actually only at the salary cap floor, simply because of all the dead cap space you're carrying for other
teams. Is that one of the reasons why they came out with those ticket packages? Like, who wants to pay that much money to go watch the Coyotes play in a college rink? I don't know if you saw the ticket prices that came out, Dave.
No, I didn't.
I mean, it's the same as most NHL arenas.
Well, that's what they said.
But the problem is they're not going to be playing in an NHL arena.
Yeah, I know. It is an unusual situation in Arizona, nonetheless. And I mean, the good golfing and the good weather, notwithstanding, I'm not so sure the players, from the sounds of it, I don't know who keeps saying it. One of the analysts, I think it's Frank Saravalli, of Daily Faceoff. He's often saying the players aren't happy about the idea of playing there for the next 3 to 5 years or however long it's. I mean, arenas don't go up in a minute, right? So I'm not here to shit on Arizona fans, because you know God knows that if you're an Arizona Coyotes fan,
it's not the fans, Dave.
You've been through hell and high water.
Well, the Coyotes have some good loyal fans. I mean, there might not be as many as you know certain other markets, but I mean, come on, like. What other major of the four major professional leagues, what other league would have a team playing in front of 3,200 fans? I'll give you the answer. None.
Yeah, no, I know. It is definitely going to be an interesting, you know, situation there in Arizona. But look, I think the general tenor of the, it's interesting to be doing an audit, if you will, as you just said, or a post-mortem on this Jets team while the season is still ongoing. Cause it feels very unusual, right? Like you're talking about what this team needs to do, and yet they still have games to play. And you know, our friend Murad Atesh of The Athletic wrote an article today talking about one of the positives from the season was the idea that, now I'll link it in the papers, I haven't had a chance to do it because it came out just as we were getting ready to come on air, but the idea that new voices have emerged for leadership from this Jets group. You've seen, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers more vocal and speaking more often. Kyle Connor more vocal and speaking more often. Pierre-Luc Dubois more vocal and speaking more often. So perhaps there is, you know, some benefit to this. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to how do they blend this all? Because, you know, I mean, can we go through another season where Nikolaj Ehlers is not on the first power play unit? Can we go through another season where
he's
not on the first line? I mean, like, it is... Like if I could do the little steam thing coming out of my ears, that's what it would show. Because I mean, how do you have a guy who can provide that sort of offense to your team and he isn't, you know, a focal point? So I think there's a lot that this, like I said, this organization is going to need to focus on this summer, because, you know, you can't spend the way they spent. And, you know, this fan base isn't going to be happy with mediocrity. This fan base isn't happy with, oh, great, we're just in the NHL. Oh no, we're going to lose our team. Like, that's not the mindset. The mindset is people are paying, you know, thousands or tens of thousands or whatever their packages are, especially if they're their own boxes. They're not happy to just be in the NHL. You know, that's an old mindset. And I think it's a dated mindset. I don't think it applies anymore. Folks now want to support a winner. And like I said, if you didn't have success this year, and I think personally, Kevin Sheveldayoff made a mistake last year. And it's easy to, with hindsight, to look back and say it was a mistake. Of course, it's easy, right? You know, at the time, I thought it was a good move to bring in Nate Schmidt. At the time, I thought it was a good move to bring in Brendan Dillon for relatively low cost, except for the fact that you created a logjam, except for the fact that those guys are signed to term. And as a result, you know, it does, like I said, create a logjam for your young prospects. But the problem is, it's a bit chicken and the egg, because the reality is you didn't know if Dylan Sandberg needed those additional 32 games in the AHL this year in order to be ready for an NHL role. You know, the same for Johnny Kovacevic. It's potentially the same for Ville Heinola. So, you know, like I said, it's a bit of a conundrum for the Jets club and for the management. But anyways, we'll get to that when the postmortem begins. I think we're going to head to our first commercial break, because we got Kenny Wiebe of Sportsnet and also of Kenny and Rennie. He's going to be coming up with us. He's going to wake us up, Ezzy, this Saturday morning. So let's head to commercial break, and then we'll be joined by Ken Wiebe of Sportsnet and Kenny and Rennie. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this fine Saturday morning. Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and now we're waking up with Kenny.
We needed to wake up. That's why we got Kenny on.
We're waking up. Kenny is going to bring his hot takes and wake us up this morning. Kenny Wiebe, how are you from Sportsnet? And of course, Kenny and Rennie. How are you doing, Kenny?
Good morning to the Curves. Always a pleasure to be with you. Not quite sure we're going to be at the flaming hot levels here, but definitely going to provide some solid takes, let's hope. Okay. I'll leave the fire to you. That's why you have it in the background.
That is why it is above my head, Kenny. But let's start with an icy take, actually, because you were at the Winnipeg Ice game last night. They won their first playoff game here in Winnipeg. So maybe share some of your thoughts on the Winnipeg Ice and what they were able to do last night as they go for a WHL championship.
Yes, sir, David. Fun week all around on the ice front. We had James Patrick on the long form version of the Kenny and Rennie show on Thursday, and he was absolutely tremendous. And one of his few rules was never be late. So that's why, you know, as usual, I try to pop into the chat room a little bit early. His team was not late, out shooting the opponent 11-2 in the first period yesterday. Quite a dominant showing, even though it was only 1-0. They were very solid defensively. They got their offensive game going as the game went on. Now, the PA Raiders are a strong defensive team. They were able to hang around. They got some excellent goaltending. But for the ice, they looked like a really, a solid team that was ready to go. And if you're James Patrick and the coaching staff, you're thrilled with the way game one went, but you're probably able to say, could have executed a little bit better, right? That was one of those things where I think, you know, we talked about it a lot with the ice. They don't have a ton of playoff experience because no one played playoffs the last couple of years because of COVID. Outside of Jack Finley in his 15 games, but really high, you know, high event game. They were very solid defensively. They did have a little bit of a scare as Matt Savoy left the game. He took a shot in the knee and then went to the ice a little bit. James Patrick, I think, told reporters, I was not on the call, but he told reporters that he was unsure or unclear if Savoy would play game two. But obviously, that would be a big loss for the ice, but they have tons of depth. And again, you have to hope first and foremost for the player that it's, you know, something that he can get over fairly quickly here. He's obviously a big piece of the puzzle for the Winnipeg Ice, but man, they had tons of excellent performances right through the lineup. And Daniel Hauser was very sharp. I mean, again, young goalie has had an excellent year. And on the injury front, Gage Alexander, who'd been out for quite some time, was on the ice for the pregame warmup and dressed as the backup. So I would guess that that's also some good news on that front. But very impressive showing. It was a fantastic atmosphere, standing room only at the Ice Cave yesterday. And sounded like there were only a few seats available for tonight's game, too. But overall, yeah, really solid showing by another one of those great hockey teams, Dave, in town. And we're going to try to shine a light on the Manitoba Moose with the Kenny and Rennie pregame before the playoffs get going. But man, the Ice are a very solid team, and they got off to a very solid start on Friday night.
They sure did, and they'll be looking to continue that tonight to game two, 7 p.m. at the Ice Cave. So they'll be looking in. Like you said, the atmosphere looked fantastic. So that's what you like to see, Winnipeggers and Manitobans supporting local hockey. So always good to see you. Now, Kenny, let's go to the main club. Let's go to the big club and let's talk about the Jets, because as you and I were talking about it to start this show, the postmortem has begun.
Yeah.
And we're still with four games to go. So what were your biggest takeaways from Thursday's conversation with Blake Wheeler and Thursday's conversation with interim head coach Dave Lowry?
Yeah, certainly interesting week all around. And yeah, I mean, the funny part, as you guys know, is that given the fact that the Jets will miss the playoffs, the post-mortem will be April, May, June, July, August, and also probably part of September. But hopefully by September, we've turned the page to the tee-up of the next season, because the post-mortem is going to go on forever. That is the nature of the beast, I guess, if you will. But yeah, I mean, interesting, obviously. I'll start with Lowry because I've got a little bit more to say about Wheeler, obviously. Dave, obviously, I know that you know from watching the Moose that, you know, a couple guys would be deserving of looks, including Leon Gavanka, just because of the fact that he is waiver exempt, as you mentioned on the old Twitter machine this week. I personally, as you guys know, as the advocate and conductor of the Gus bus, would like to see David Gustafson get another carrot for the year that he has had. Love the way that he handled himself with Hustler on Winnipeg Sports Talk. Yeah. I know he also spoke with Mike McIntyre yesterday as well. I think, you know, even though Dave said it wasn't going to be an audition and they know what they have, I would say this might be one of those situations. It may have been something he just said in the moment. I'm not saying he said it flippantly, but I think by the time they get down to, you know, his second and last game, that tone may change. And again, I think it's how they should handle it, to be quite frank. There are probably some Jets players that could use a breather. Yes, we know the season will be long enough, but for a guy like Gustafson, who I loved how frank he was with Hustler, talking about, you know, David's one of the most positive people around. You know that very well, Dave, and you know, I know it from my limited conversations with him. It was a dark time for him. I mean, when you wait all season for that opportunity and you basically play two shifts in one game and three in the other, it can drive you absolutely mad, given all the time you have to spend on the trainer's table and doing your recovery. But the fact that, as you've seen with your own eyes, he's come back and played, you know, 18 to 21 minutes per night, used in all situations, and has been driving play. You want to give that carrot as an organization to say, David, we know it's been a hard year. We love how you've persevered. Now get yourself ready to be the fourth line center next year, or play with Adam Lowry on a reconfigured line with Mason Appleton, right? We know there's opportunity next year. I also understand the premise that you maybe don't want to risk injury. You have David playing extremely well. You want him to be one of the unquestioned leaders for the Moose playoffs, but giving him a game or two at the end of the year would not inhibit that whatsoever. So first and foremost, I'd like to see that. And you know, whether it's playing Ville Heinola or Leon Gavanka or giving Johnny Kovacevic another game, or even considering a start for Mikhail Burden, which, again, you can see both sides. It would be a nice reward for him, but you know, could you be leery that if it doesn't go well, it could stretch into the Calder Cup playoffs? I mean, as Husser said yesterday, I wouldn't be starting him against the Colorado Avalanche if I were planning to start him. But against the, you know, against one of the other teams, Philadelphia or Seattle, I can understand the argument for it. But especially too, because as you know, he won't be waiver exempt next year either. So we know Eric Comrie's done an excellent job in that backup role, and obviously that was something we'll get into more. But that's a long stop at the buffet without even getting to Wheeler. But I can be a little bit more concise with Blake. I thought that it was an important tone that he set. He was not combative. He was very reflective. He looked very much inwardly in terms of accountability and taking responsibility for what would be considered another lost season for the group. I think that any people that thought that Blake had checked out because you haven't seen him at the podium as often this year, I think that his words were obviously quite meaningful, and it was in the delivery. It's easy to say you hate losing and you hate what's going on, but you know, Blake is not up there providing lip service. That's not what Blake does. He is a guy who speaks from the heart, and I thought he spoke so quite eloquently. And again, I understand that some folks, and we've seen it in the chat rooms, some folks feel maybe too little too late, but to me, I don't take that tone. I think that it was at an important time for the organization. Blake said what needed to be said, but just like the same as all the other guys who have gone to the podium and done a nice job in terms of the accountability, it will come down to action that determines whether or not the Jets can pick themselves up off the mat and get out of also-ran status and move back towards the goal of becoming a contender once again. But I thought it was very evident and clear that Blake Wheeler wants to be part of the solution. And he also, even though he didn't care to share some of the problems, he knows exactly what they are, and he knows what his role is in trying to find those important solutions.
No, Kenny, just sticking with Blake Wheeler, because I know, you know, you've talked about this with Huss on Winnipeg Sports Talk. I'm pretty sure, you know, last time you were on IC, we talked to you about it. And obviously, you know, it's a hot topic amongst Jets fans right now. But, you know, in terms of the leadership group right now, and I'm obviously not going to ask you, you know, if you think, you know, there needs to be a new captain for the Jets, because to be honest with you, I think, you know, nobody's questioning, you know, that Wheeler, nobody's saying that at least I'm not saying that he's a bad leader, because when he led the Jets to the Western Conference final, was he a bad leader then? Obviously, no, he wasn't a bad leader. There have been some problems, you know, with the Jets in terms of, you know, player personnel turnover, coaching change, everything like that. But I guess the question I wanted to ask you, Kenny, was what do you see happening here, you know, in the off season leading up to next season with the leadership group? Is there going to be any changes? Like, overall, just kind of what are your thoughts on the current leadership situation with the Jets?
Yeah, as the only way Blake Wheeler's not going to be captain is if he doesn't want to be captain anymore, I think would be the best way to put that. I think what we've seen with the Jets is we've seen some emerging young leaders, whether that's Kyle Connor or Pierre-Luc Dubois, Nikolai Ehlers, guys of that nature, and guys who've, some of them who have come up in the system, others who have come into the program. I think that it's important on those fronts to have those guys, but the Jets also lost an important leader in Andrew Copp. So that does provide opportunity within the group to seize that leadership mantle. We know Josh has done an excellent job as an alternate captain. Adam Lowry has been part of the leadership group for quite some time, but I think part of the reason, this is my personal theory, part of the reason we haven't seen Blake as often is because the volume of availabilities since he became captain was quite high, especially until the rooms closed because of COVID. But also I do see part of the reason we haven't seen Blake as often on the podium is that he is providing space for those leaders to emerge and to have their voices heard. Because what we know, one of the criticisms is it's Blake's way or the highway. And, so to me, I think that this is part of his way of showing inclusion when it comes to the group itself. Have there been times at the podium where Blake looks obviously visibly frustrated, is curt, and doesn't appear interested to be doing interviews? Yes. But that to me is only because he's sick and tired of trying to say something other than what he's said so many times over the years, right? I mean, and that's the issue here, that this is kind of this path of, reaching the conference final. And it's so interesting, you guys, and you guys both know it. Remember, Paul Maurice, like minutes after the team was eliminated and then reiterating in the exit meeting day, it's not going to be a natural that you just get back to this place. It's going to be incredibly difficult. You need to remember how hard it was just to get to the conference final. Again, I'm not saying the Jets forgot, but what I am saying is they have not had the same commitment level since that time when it comes to defending. And I know that because every single day at practice that year, including morning skates, they worked on defensive structure, not for half an hour, but for brief periods where they were drilling down in the details. And I understand, if you're a head coach and think you can't do that every single day, but if you want to get back to that level, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, I think you need to spend more time on it and you need a much higher commitment level if you're going to reach that level, because let's face it, it's a hard level to reach. And we've seen the consequences when a team does not commit to playing at that level without the puck. So that's a long-winded way of saying I think there are important leaders on the Winnipeg Jets. You guys know this. Kyle Connor has been very soft-spoken over the years and really at the podium hasn't really, I wouldn't say put a lot of effort, but it isn't something where he's not a shine the light on me kind of person by nature. But I love what I've seen from Kyle Connor this year in terms of his maturity and his willingness to speak out when it comes to some of the issues that have been plaguing the Jets. And there have been a few times, whether it was by design or not, he has thrown the old microscope over and said, you want to see where the problem is? How about look right over here? Look at what the other team is doing in terms of back pressure and puck management. And what he didn't say is what was happening. We're not doing these things well enough. So I love that part of his game. Kyle Connor should win the Lady Bing trophy for the...
I agree 100% with that, Weber, for sure.
He's shown all year two minor penalties. And as he reminded us, one of them basically was trying to stop Connor McDavid on a breakaway, and it's so funny, he didn't even remember the penalty on Matt Barzal. That's how few and far between the penalties have been for him. And the thing about him, Lady Bing is not a trophy that a lot of players want to win because it often suggests that you're not involved in the guts of the game, right? It's guys who play on the perimeter. But even though Kyle Connor is not a physical guy who runs D-men through the end boards, he's involved. He's a tenacious forechecker. He's on the ice almost among the league's most, especially at 5-on-5 and overall ice time. He's involved against the best players in the league all the time, which makes it tough. If you're on the wrong side of the puck or not on the D side, it's easy to take a tripping, hooking, holding minor because it just shows how often he's in position to make the plays. And we know he needs to work on his defensive game. There have been some improvements. He's also done an incredible job on the penalty kill, which only heightens his value for an award like the Lady Bing trophy. But I do see some emerging leaders with the Jets. That doesn't mean Blake needs to take a seat or move to the side. I don't see this as a situation. I know a lot of folks would say, oh, well, look at the San Jose Sharks. They stripped both Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau of the captaincy at one point in time. And then I think
that's so rare though, Kenny, right? Like you just don't see that very often.
Yeah, and again, I think, and even too, like when LeCavalier, I think, didn't LeCavalier go through something similar? I mean, these guys were at different points in their careers, and I know a lot of Jets fans are always looking. Let's just look at for the last 5 years. Well, Scheifele will be the next captain, and then, oh, Josh will be the next. They've been looking for the next captain almost as quickly as the Bombers were looking for their next quarterback until they got Zach Kolaros. So, again, I understand that not everyone agrees with how Blake handles himself in the media, but I don't think necessarily that a captain change needs to be made. I do think we've talked about this before. I think that Blake's had a strong year in terms of his offensive production. Do I think there would be some value to having Blake spend some time on a line with Adam Lowry if you're trying to stretch out your depth? Sure. I think that would be something that makes a lot of sense. I'm not saying he has to play on the third line all the time, but Blake is a guy that at 35 years old, going into his 36-year-old season, that you can play up and down the lineup, and it's not an affront at his abilities. Like, the Jets did the same thing with Paul Stastny. You know what I mean? And it worked out well for them. And Paul Stastny is ending the year as essentially the number one or number two center, depending on what your interpretation or what happens on every particular night, where you're kind of 1-2 with Pierre-Luc Dubois. So, and sorry, just Stastny, just a quick word on Stastny before we move on. And sorry, Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt are leaders. Like, these are guys who have played on winning teams. So they've done a nice job in helping. Again, I understand folks say that, no, the Jets' improved defense didn't lead to improved defense. But those guys also had a big impact in the room. And those are, we know there's change coming on the back end. Could it involve one of them? Perhaps. But, there are also guys that have brought value in terms of the off-ice. Also, not just in terms of bringing a little bit more of a sunny demeanor to a group that has a lot of serious people, but in terms of professionalism and helping young players, Nate Schmidt has put on a masterclass this year in terms of how he can help young players along. His meeting at the podium with Ville Heinola was absolutely unbelievable, and it was something that I'm sure he had said a lot of those things in private to Ville Heinola, but to see it on display and the interaction and the way Heinola looked at Schmidt when he was talking to him about, how old are you? I didn't even get into the league until I was 24. At the trade deadline, when you think you've established yourself in the lineup, Washington traded four players 2 years in a row to knock me into press row. I love that exchange. Brendan Dillon has been fantastic in terms of his mentorship with Dylan Sandberg, who has been excellent for the Winnipeg Jets. And then, shifting back to my original premise, Paul Stastny, I wrote about this at CGOB.com in my weekly column. Paul's not just an important voice for the Jets. He's a 2020 guy at 36 years old who had not scored 20 goals since 2013-14. But it was the seventh time in his career in 16 years that he has done so, right? That's impressive for a guy who is a pass-first, high-vision, high-IQ player. But, some of it's taking advantage of opportunities. But other part of it is how prepared he is at 36. You know what? He's not as fast as he used to be. But you know what? It doesn't impact his game because he's smarter than almost everybody on the ice. His ability to anticipate is higher. And during a year where we haven't seen great defensive effort from Mark Scheifele, among others, Paul Stastny has done an absolutely tremendous job moving back to his natural position of center and showing people what you need to do in terms of commitment level when you play that position. And the other part about Paul, he's done a great job on the penalty kill at times, which, again, we know these are taxing minutes. They're taxing minutes for Kyle Connor, and we know they're taxing minutes for a 36-year-old forward. But because of Paul's durability and because he takes care of himself and because of a situation like where Kopp leaves, I think Paul Stastny having an opportunity to return to the Jets would be high. Again, the Jets will have to make him a solid offer. Would they like to get him for a discount from the 3.75? Yes. I don't think you need a two-year deal because Paul is like a year to year. He said it himself. He's basically going year to year. If it's two, it'll probably be closer to $3 million. But if it's somewhere between 2.75 and three, I think that Paul Stastny.
That's worth every dollar then, Kenny.
no-brainer for me, and especially, you know, especially given the circumstances, like the same reason that Paul Stastny was brought back this year to sort of provide the bridge to Cole Perfetti, it's the same thing would apply now, especially with the injuries plural to Perfetti. And, you know, great to see him back on the ice, but, and I think that Cole will be in the lineup starting in October, but it's not just a safety valve. It's an opportunity to provide a guy who you want Cole Perfetti to be around. And you know what? That's the other thing. We know that Christian Reichel spent a bunch of time when he was out of the lineup around the Moose helping some of those young players, Dave. But having Perfetti do his rehab and recovery with the Jets would have been excellent for him in terms of seeing how Paul Stastny and others have handled themselves this year. And I think it'll be a huge bonus come the start of next year when he's getting back to really fully establishing himself as an NHLer, because he had done such a nice job of keeping his place in the lineup while he was up before he was injured in that hit from Jamie Oleksiak.
Well, if you weren't awake before Kenny answered that one, you are awake now, because Kenny Weeb was just at the buffet, folks. That's Kenny Weeb of Sportsnet.
There should be also a fire behind Kenny. He's bringing the heat this morning.
Also of Kenny and
Southwestern barbecue sauce right there.
Kenny was at the buffet so long, he actually stole. To use it in the same terms, Kenny, I was going to go to the buffet and select that item, aka the Paul Stastny question, but you just launched right into it. So I didn't get a chance to ask you what Paul Stastny. I was going to ask.
Sorry
you
about that. And I'm okay. I'm starving after that Bernstein's Deli ad. I am starving. I know I'd have to get the fried onions on the side, but the Illegal Curve sandwich would come in quite handy today, right now, after that trip to the buffet.
Well, it was a good trip to the buffet. Always a lot of good information. You know, Kenny, a little bit of news. Mikael Burton was returned to the Moose from the Jets today. So I suspect he's probably in Rockford with the team where they're going to get underway tonight at 6 p.m., I think it is, in Rockford to take on the Ice Hogs, potential first-round matchup. If not, tomorrow against the Admirals, also a potential first-round matchup. Now, Kenny, I know you covered the first iteration of the Manitoba Moose,
yep,
you know, as much as anyone in this city. What is this playoff run going to do for this club? Because we talk about all the prospects, but you know it because you saw it for the original Manitoba Moose and what they were able to do for the Vancouver Canucks. How important is a long playoff run for these young prospects?
Oh, just absolutely tremendous. And again, I think that's for the folks who have been up in arms about why are the Jets not just sitting down 10 players and playing the Moose. First and foremost, it's partly, you know, again, you don't do that B, you only have the 4 recalls. And we should clarify, yesterday after the Dylan Sandberg recall moving officially from emergency to regular, yeah, the Jets will have 2 recalls available. Yeah. And I do expect them to use them. Secondly, the Vancouver Canucks 2011 team that went to the Stanley Cup final and lost to the Boston Bruins, they had a ton of players who benefited, whether it was during the lockout year playoffs where they electrified the city and had basically a full house against a team like the Rockford or the Rochester Americans, who had Ryan Miller, Derek Roy, mm-hmm, Jason Pominville, a ton of guys who became NHLers. That also was the case when the Moose went to the Calder Cup final in 2009. They had tons of players, including Corey Schneider and some other younger guys who were so valuable in terms of helping get to the Vancouver Canucks where they ended up going, and then following that up with a President's Trophy the next year, even though I think they had the first round loss to the LA Kings, if I'm having my years correct here. But the ability to play in high leverage kind of games in the playoffs, where the emotions are high, where the stakes are high, was incredibly valuable. They had tons of players who benefited from that. Alexander Burrows, Jason Jaffrey, Alex Edler, Yannick Hansen, all kinds of players that benefited from that. Mason Raymond, guys like that. Man, oh man, for these Moose players, especially, again, no playoffs, mostly because of COVID, you need to play when the spotlight is shining brightly and the stakes are high, and you can't afford that neutral zone turnover that feeds the transition game the other way. You need to be disciplined, pardon me. You need to be playing at a high, high pace, and I think it's going to be so valuable. Gustafson, Sandberg, Hainala, Kovacevic, Morgan Barron, who I think, again, has done a nice job, but again, this was not a knock at all against Morgan Barron, but You know, he had a really good game in Montreal, goal and an assist, playing with Ehlers. I reminded people on Huss's show, Morgan Barron did a great job of taking advantage of the opportunity, but don't go penciling him in the top six based on one single hockey game. I love what I've seen from Barron. I think his game translates excellently to the NHL level. He's not going to replace Andrew Kopp, but he carries some of Kopp's qualities. He's a very versatile guy, can play center or wing. I think he's smart enough to be a high-level penalty killer. I think he's got good enough hands to give you 12 to 15 goals at the NHL level, depending on usage. But just give the guy a chance to establish himself first. This is the longest he's even played in the NHL, let alone handing him over his spot in the top six. But he is a top six player at the American League level. I think you can tap into his chemistry with Jeff Molot if you want to play them together. I know he's also played a lot with Gustafson, as he mentioned, with Hussler. But because of the depth on the Moose, it'll be interesting to see where he fits in. For all the folks who say Ville Heinola has nothing to learn at the AHL level because he's been a dominant player, that's completely untrue. Ville Heinola has not played a single Calder Cup playoff game, to my knowledge, and the fact that he'll be playing 20 to 22 minutes, maybe even 23 on some nights, even though we know the Jets have incredible, or Moose have incredible depth on the back end, and some of their defensemen won't even get to dress in the playoffs without injury. Ville Heinola's reps against competition in the Calder Cup playoffs will absolutely help him become an NHL regular in October. And I would argue they're going to be critical minutes for him. You know, yes, he can do some things not without trying. That's not what I'm suggesting. He can do anything that he wants at the AHL level at times. But in the playoffs and under those circumstances where you have to be committed defensively, which he has made a great commitment to being better defensively, as you've seen with your very own eyes, David, doing that when the lights are shining brightly, when a team is trying to win four rounds and, sorry, I was going to say 16 playoff games, but I know round one is only five, best of five, so 15 playoff wins, is absolutely critical for him to do that. Not only for him to play well, but to dominate at that level. We know he's a young player. We know he's ready for the NHL. But he'll be more ready by playing 2, 3, 4 rounds of Calder Cup playoff action. That also applies to David Gustafson and any of those other players on the Moose who see opportunity and want to seize it with the Jets. Moving forward, it is absolutely critical. Mark Morrison has done a fab, and his staff have done a great job with the Moose. David, you know that. I know it. But now it gets interesting. Now it gets fun. This is what you play all year for, the chance to show that you can be one of the best teams. And it's not just the Jets that this has been beneficial for. Look back, you know, look back in the old hot tub time machine to when Jeff Carter and Mike Richards joined the Philadelphia Phantoms. Mm-hmm. I think after that incredible World Junior, that was the season where they starred for Canada at the World Juniors. They joined the Philadelphia Phantoms and the job that they did. And I would even say Ottawa. Ottawa is a great example where they had a ton of guys that have moved on after a nice run. So I would, and even too, like Dallas Stars right now, before they went to the Calder Cup or Stanley Cup final,
yeah,
Roope Hintz was a great player at times in the playoffs, right? So
Jason Robertson.
Yeah, exactly. All of those guys have really had a role in doing so. So those are important minutes. And like I said, Heinola will benefit. For all the folks who are upset about Heinola, and I understand why they want him to see more games, I get it. But this time for Ville Heinola in the Calder Cup playoffs will be essential in his development. I think he takes full advantage of it, and I think he is going to benefit greatly from a playoff run like that, where he runs the first power play, plays heavy minutes, defends against veteran players who have tons of experience. I think he's going to really flourish. And also Dylan Sandberg, who I said earlier has been great. Yep. This is a great time for him to shine. I loved his composure. For him, knowing that his game translates to the NHL level the way that it has, that will allow him to be more offensive, Dave. You know this. He's been more of a defense-first player, but yeah, his ability to create, you know, to nail down those stretch passes. And I think the other thing, too, the fact that he's had that physical element now translate at the NHL level. I'm not going out to say that he's going to be running around the ice crushing people all the time, but he knows that he can step up and make physical plays. I love that edge that he's added to the Jets' back end, and I think that part will be important for him because, again, I know he's been physical at times, Dave, but I think as a player like that, because there's more chaos at the AHL level, mm-hmm. and the positioning is not quite as sound at times, I think that you kind of pick your spots a little bit more if you're Dylan Sandberg at the AHL level. Now he can be a little bit more physical and look for those things. But more importantly, it's his mobility and the other parts of his game that he's shown. First to pucks, getting back quickly, you know, hitting the seam, hitting the guy on the zone exits. I think that he's going to be absolutely oozing confidence, just like he did when he came back from the hand injury originally, Dave, right? When he came back, yep. got his bearings again. But now he really feels, now he's played against Nathan MacKinnon. He's played against Alexander Barkov. So nobody the AHL throws against him is going to have the skill level that he's had to, you know, contend with yep. when he goes back to the Manitoba Moose. But at the same time, you go down knowing it's still a very good league and other you have to be at your best in order to beat those teams.
Kenny, just a quick last one for you here. I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned physicality and, you know, I think, you know, I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, most Jets fans, most observers, people who cover the team think that there's going to be a little bit of turnover on the back end, but you know, there could be a little bit of turnover in the forward group, maybe not as much. And I wanted to ask you about Zach Sanford, because obviously he's playing an elevated role
yep.
with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Blake Wheeler, but he's a pending UFA as opposed to Appleton, who's a pending RFA. You've got Dominic Toninato, who's got 1 year left. And I realize, you know, he makes a little bit more at $2 million, but I guess the question I wanted to ask you is, what do you think the probability is of Sanford coming back? Because I think there's a lot to like about his game. I mean, this is a guy, you know, that hasn't scored a goal yet, I don't think, as a member of the Jets, but he's big. You know, he dropped the mitts the other night. I forget who he fought on the Lightning.
Corey Perry.
There you go, Corey Perry. So he's not afraid to drop the mitts, right? And you don't have a ton of guys on the Jets. We know that's not how they're constructed. But what do you see, you know, the chances of the Jets bringing Sanford back on a 1 or 2 year deal?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot to like at times for his game. He has been given a great opportunity in an elevated role, and I understand that the Yevgeny Svechnikov fan club is probably a little bit upset, thinking, well, hey, when Svechnikov was up there not producing, then he got bumped down. Why is Zach Sanford staying up there so long? And I understand that. I think Svechnikov's had a solid season overall and has more to give. For Sanford, you got to have finish when you're playing with those type of players. I think you've seen he's a guy that is comfortable hanging on to the puck. He's very patient. He's made some nice plays that weren't converted. He has had some plays himself and looks that have not been converted. I think he's a guy that does bring some physical nature. I think he's always the kind of player that a head coach would say you want. You see glimpses of the physicality, so you want to see it more often. I would say that, you know, he is a guy who scored in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final and won a Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues. So when you talk about adding to a winning culture, I think there would be that element of it that would make sense as well. 50-50 proposition. And again, I don't say that to say he's on the fence. I think that, you know, Zach will have some interest elsewhere. I know he was in Ottawa. Does he want to play in Canada? I don't know. Being an American guy, he certainly must like the opportunity he's been given. We know that he hasn't been used in a penalty killing role, but we know he's been used in one before. Could he maybe help in that regard? Yes. So again, I would say there's a chance he's back, but if he's back, I would not expect him in an elevated role. I would expect him in a role with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton. I think it's been more a matter of, you know, injury, and injury has created the opportunity for him. And as Sean Reynolds likes to say, this is one of those situations where if you are, obviously the Jets have been interested in Sanford before, they probably wouldn't have gone after him, but this is you're giving a player a glimpse of what he may be able to have if he decides to stick around. I don't think it's a lock that he returns, but I do think there are, again, for all the folks that are up in arms and think he hasn't done anything, this is one of those examples where, you know, small sample size and you need to look a little bit deeper. And I know his underlying numbers aren't great. I'm just saying that he's had some opportunities that, you know, maybe if that first one goes, he might have 5 by now. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Zach's a streaky player. He could be a double-digit goal guy. He has some qualities that would be helpful for the Jets. I do think they'd be interested in bringing him back. I think it's, you know, again, different situations. but it reminds me of when they had Drew Stafford and they were able to sign Drew Stafford. Drew took a look around, looked at other, you know, potentially that was during the wooing period. I think he would have listened to some of the other offers. And then at the end of the day, he's like, oh, I can maybe play with Patrick Laine. Yeah, I mean, that would there would be some curb appeal.
Some benefit.
Yeah, there'd be some curb appeal to do that if you're Drew Stafford. And I know they didn't play together a whole lot, but I think that Stafford would be a similar situation where you can maybe convince a guy to stick around for a little bit longer. But yeah, I mean, in terms of offseason, yeah, there's going to be changes. There's no doubt about that. Will those changes include Mark Scheifele? I know that will be one of the biggest offseason storylines. You'd love to be a fly on the wall for the exit meeting. The exit meeting that Mark Scheifele has with Kevin Cheveldayoff will go a long way to determining which direction the Winnipeg Jets want to go. If Mark tells Kevin he wants to be part of the solution, that this was an outlier type of season. And yes, I know folks will say, well, he hasn't been that great defensively for more than 1 year. That's true. This was probably the worst year of it in terms of engagement. But you also, that's 70 points this year, but 80 plus points in years past. You have to be abundantly sure that you can try to replace either that offense or to bring in the type of players that will be net positive in terms of their defensive play in order to make up for that lost production. I also think that it's important, I've said this before over the years, and I know people don't like hearing that as an excuse, but COVID has impacted people differently. It's been a weird couple of years in terms of interactions and who you can be with and what your, you know, mental, where you are mentally in terms of, you know, it's tough. It can be tough for even the most positive people around. So this will be the longest stretch of time for Mark Scheifele between, you know, one season and the next. I mean, yes, I know that there were years that he ended the season injured, but this is the most important offseason in Mark Scheifele's career, no matter who he's going to be playing for. And again, I would say it's not a foregone conclusion that he's gone. We know there's going to be change on the back end because the Jets have to either make room for Hanala and Samberg. And I would even argue too, I think Dave, you're in this camp. Johnny Kovacevic is going to be one of the seven defensemen next year with the Jets.
100%. Yeah.
He's not going to clear waivers. He has done enough. He's a big enough, strong enough. He's had a very good year. Does that double-digit offense in terms of goals translate to the NHL level? No, but it shows that he's a good puck mover, and he knows that he can get involved and be active.
That's right.
He's a big, strong guy. He can play a physical brand of hockey. So you're basically looking at almost needing to make room, you know, I would argue, for three guys, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so that means you have to move somebody. You don't necessarily want to move some, you know, don't want to necessarily move this guy or not that guy. Neil Pionk has had a tough year, but also, again, recency bias. Neil Pionk was the Jets' best defenseman for two seasons in a row. This year, it has not gone well after December 5th. And that's the other part, guys. Neil actually had a decent start. I mean, it seems like forever ago, but the Spinorama was out two games in a row. Neil was off to a pretty good start, and then things went off the rails after the suspension and the concussion. There's no, and again, were there some tough games before that? Yes. But overall, the first month and change was not as rough as people remember for Neil Pionk. And we know he played through some kind of injury, so he's been looking more physically engaged lately. I think that he would probably be a good bet to regroup. Now, again, is he going to regroup to a first pairing level? I mean, I wonder too, guys. There are going to be tons of options when you look at the pairings. I mean, I think, you know, 2 years ago, the Jets couldn't play Neil Pionk and Josh Morrissey together because that left their other two pairings sort of in a very rough spot. Next year, Josh Morrissey's been the Jets' best defenseman by a significant margin. What about Pionk and Morrissey together at some point next year? I'm not saying as a permanent pairing, but you could see them maybe even bring out the best in one another. So anyways, I think it's going to be a fascinating offseason. The full audit is necessary and is important, and how they decide to move forward will honestly dictate how quickly the Jets can get back to be, you know, to get past square one, as Blake Wheeler put it, to sort of tie a little bow up on this last trip to the buffet and the segment with my good friends here at the Legal Curve. Now, do I have to give Drew grief for not showing up today? does he need to wake up, or what's happening here?
It's his 10th wedding anniversary, so I guess we got to cut him a little bit
happy anniversary. Slack, right? No, happy anniversary. I should have done my research on that one. I was at the Ice Cave too late last night. I should have known that in advance. Happy anniversary.
Yeah, because Kenny, obviously, you know, when my wedding, I'm celebrating my 5th wedding anniversary. You know all of our anniversaries and birthdays and everything like that, right?
All I know is this. The buffet is closed. The buffet is closed. But we always thank Kenny for his appearances on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's Ken Wiebe of Sportsnet and of Kenny and Rennie. And you can also read his stuff, Global News / CGOB. Ken's got the Jets beat covered like no other. So we thank you, Kenny, for joining us on this Saturday morning.
Thanks, Kenny. We're awake now.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. And again, yes, the buffet is closed. All you see left are the shrimp tails from the shrimp cocktail. That is all. All the other plates are empty. Thank you for having me. I hope you guys have a tremendous last couple of weeks. And I know it's there are going to be a ton of exciting and fun off-season shows to follow. And like we said, still some great hockey being played. The Jets have those 4 home games, and we also will. There will be playoff hockey on the horizon, and we know we saw folks support it last night at the Ice Cave. They'll be supporting it tonight, and we know that the Moose playoffs are going to be absolutely fabulous for people who still have their itch to be going. We know there's fun playoff hockey at the amateur levels as well, including as a, you know, as a proud Manitoba Junior Hockey League alum. We know there's some great MJ playoffs happening right now as well.
Thank you, Kenny. We appreciate it. That's Kenny Wiebe of Sportsnet.
And Kenny, the golf courses aren't going to open for another few weeks.
lots of hockey to cover. Lots of hockey to cover.
We're
going to
be in the ranks. I mean, it's going to be mid-May before we're
going to Manitoba Golf Tour is not starting anytime soon. There's too much overland flooding. So we're going to go to break. Thanks, Kenny. We appreciate it. Thanks very much for joining us this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. Why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, that was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go.
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, as I still put my earbuds in. I'm Dave Manuk, your host for today, your temporary host, filling in for Drew Mandel. That's Ezra Ginsberg. We're at the buffet, but there's nothing left because Weaver hit it all. We appreciate Ken Weeb of Sportsnet, Kenny and Rennie, Global News. He does it all, but he gives good insight, and we always love having Kenny on.
I mean, we've got a lot of great journalists and reporters covering the Jets, but as far as I'm concerned, there's nobody more knowledgeable and nobody who has a better kind of grasp of the grass is definitely still covered by snow. I think Kenny has just such a great grasp of the Jets and hockey in general in this province. And, you know, they're doing such a great job on Kenny and Rennie, both on the post game show and on the long form edition. So always love having Weber on. We go way back.
Yeah, we go way back to him.
Way back to the Philadelphia draft in 2014, right?
Isn't that when he spilled his wine on me and ruined my brand new shirt? And then I wore that shirt later the next year at the next draft in 2015 at Sunrise. He said, Kenny, this is the shirt you ruined.
And that was a pretty nice shirt. Like, that was a $100 shirt, I believe.
I don't want to say. It was a pretty nice shirt. And Kenny spilled wine all over it, trying to impress Jeff O'Neill at dinner. But it's all good. We still love Kenny.
O-Dog picked up the tab, though. That was nice of him.
He did.
Because really we had no money. I mean, we were broke, so it was nice of O-Dog to pay for us.
No, that was a nice time with that group at that draft.
And then we went to Boston. We took a train to Boston and then went to a Red Sox game. I think we actually went to two Red Sox games at Fenway.
We went to two Red Sox games. Yeah, we had a nice time at the Paul Revere Hotel, if you remember, Ezzy. Nice patio up on the rooftop patio. So
yeah, the Beastie times. Boys weren't there though.
They were not there. Well, we're gonna be joined by Marc Dumont. He's a special correspondent for the Montreal Canadiens. He's coming up right away. He's got, you know, whenever we have Marc on though, I always have envy because he's always got such a great setup. So Marc is gonna join us very soon. In fact, and since I have control of it, I can bring him into the chat right away because we're going to talk to Marc. Hello, Marc. How are you?
Not too bad, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Hey, and by the way, the Habs pay for everything. If not, I'd be broadcasting from like an alley in NDG in Montreal. So,
well, Drew does the show, Marc. I mean, we had you on. I want to say we had you on like five or six times last year with the All Canadian division. So Drew does the show from his electrical room at his house. His wife, I guess, said that's the only room I'm going to let you have to broadcast the show. But he's done a nice job. He's got lots of, you know, good memorabilia. You know, good Jet stuff from Jets 1.0. But yeah, your
doesn't
setup
sound
is,
like a
is
punishment to me. Doesn't sound like a punishment to me. That sounds like a nice place to be, if I'm being perfectly honest.
I agree.
Well, you know, Marc, we brought you on to talk about the Habs, and of course, we can't help but start with the sad news about Guy Lafleur, the legend passing away. And you know, everybody seems to the hockey world after these sorts of incidents. You know, the memories pour out, and Lafleur was before my time in terms of being able to really appreciate what he was able to do with the Montreal Canadiens. But I did actually see him live here in Winnipeg a few times. Unfortunately, it was with the Quebec Nordiques and the New York Rangers. And it's funny because today in the Winnipeg Sun, Paul Friesen wrote an article about his one penalty shot in his entire career. Amazing thing that Guy Lafleur had only one penalty shot. And it seems like in Winnipeg, whenever there's a milestone event, everybody was there. Everybody remembers being there. So Timu Solani, when he broke Mike Bossy's record, you know, everybody was in the building. It only sat 15,000, but somehow every single person
that's ever lived in Winnipeg saw Solani hit 76. Yeah.
That's, you know, like every time anything milestone happens. But the scary part was I actually do have a vague memory of being at that Rangers game with my dad. So I'm not sure. It was November of 88. Sorry. So we'll have to see. I'm still a young guy. I'll have to ask my dad one day. But
Dave, we don't recognize those last 3 years. That's the deal in Montreal. Is that way? But you know what? What's funny, and I think what really showed the impact Guy Lafleur made on Canadian fans, and it's not just Canadian fans, as you mentioned, like it's around the world. Yesterday, I got texts, obviously, from you guys and you know, Nashville, Los Angeles, in Europe from, you know, people in Berlin, people in the KHL, you know what I mean? So, I mean, it was a worldwide impact. But I think with Guy Lafleur, the coolest thing, as you mentioned, not just that everyone has a story, but he was that relatable guy, right? Like, he was the guy that would go out for a drink and kind of just live life. And to me, he represented the best of hockey. I don't want to wax poetic too much, guys, but when you think about free-flowing, beautiful, excellent hockey, that's Guy Lafleur, right? Like, that buildup, and you saw it, that buildup, when he would start skating and the hair would start flowing, which, by the way, when he got rid of his helmet, that's when he started really scoring. That was Guy Lafleur, that buzz. So what really represented his impact to me, Dave, was when he came back with the Nordic and he scored 2 goals against the Canadiens at the Forum, and he got a standing ovation from the Habs, you know? And this is, for those that don't know, the Nordic and the Canadiens hated each other. Like, this was like not just a rivalry, it was a blood rivalry. So, I mean, it helped that the Habs won, but just to me, it just really shows how much the Habs faithful loved his entertainment value. Like, he was just pure entertainment. And I really think, guys, and I don't want to take anything away from Lemieux and Gretzky, but they came on his heels and it kind of overshadowed what he did. Like, he started this whole model of being a superstar and just destroying records. Yeah, Gretzky was amazing, and Lemieux, in my opinion, was the best player ever, but I actually think Guy Lafleur was underrated, if that's somehow possible, in terms of what he did on the ice. So yeah, that's my take on him. And just the amazing part is everyone has a story. Everyone has a picture. He made time for all the fans. So that that's also very important for the Montreal Canadiens, you know, is that connection with the fans.
Well, and Mark, I absolutely agree with you, what you're saying about him being underrated. And I would welcome anybody who isn't familiar with, you know, Guy Lafleur's career, just go to HockeyDB and look at his career stats. I mean, it's the same thing as looking at the career stats of Gretzky and Lemieux, right? Like, it's just 50 goals, 50 goals, 50 goals, 100 points, 100 points. Like, yeah, it's absolutely incredible, not to mention the 5 Stanley Cups and the Hart trophies and the first team All-Stars.
And the Lester B. Pearson and like the Conn Smythe and the, the crazy part was that for the first 3 years, everyone's like, we should have grabbed Marcel Dion. Like, he was the guy. Marcel Dion should have been the guy because Lafleur, I mean, he was only getting what, like 30 goals in this first 3 years? And that was an issue. But, you know, I've been going through all the messages and everyone, either their story is them or their parents, or, for example, so many people are telling me they're a new family in Canada, immigrants or refugees, and they would call him King Lafleur because they thought Guy was too pedestrian for him, you know, because they didn't know it was Guy. So it just goes to show his impact. And we talk about the Holy Trinity of the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, that's Béliveau, Richard, and Lafleur. So unfortunately, we lost, I guess, our Holy Ghost there in that combination. But just the amount of memories to me, that kind of stuff will live on forever. That goal against Boston when he jumps on the ice, and Don Cherry is going to remember it forever. But I think Habs fans are going to remember that too. He was, he made hockey fun. He made hockey beautiful. Right. And I think we kind of got away from that for a little while in the NHL. We're coming back to it. We're seeing guys be excellent on the ice, and it's amazing. You know, you look at a guy like Nick Ehlers and you're like, oh, hell yeah, I want more of that. But I really think Lafleur was the first superstar, and I'm not, like, Joe Malone was great and all that, and of course Bobby Orr and Bossy, but I really think Lafleur was the first bona fide superstar in the NHL. Like that brought it to a whole other level.
And you know, I don't think you're overstating it at all. I just want to get a little bit nostalgic because, you know, I think it was my dad's. I think a lot of us, our parents' love of hockey is what got us into hockey. And obviously, yeah, like Dave and I, you know, weren't alive for all of those great Habs teams in the 1970s, but I remember my dad just saying, like, those Habs teams, which I think you would agree, you're maybe a little bit biased, but were the greatest teams. And right at the top of the list, Guy Lafleur, Yvan Cornoyer, Serge Savard, I mean, Bob Gainey, like, I mean, it just, the list goes on and on and on. These are all Hall of Famers we're talking about. And, you know, I wanted to get back to, you know, you were mentioning that everybody has a story. And I mean, obviously, you know, he just passed away, you know, yesterday morning. So we're not sure, but I wanted to ask you about, you know, if you have any insight into
what the plans are, you know, in the coming days. I don't know if they've been finalized, because Jeff Molson, I believe, said yesterday, Mark, that they were going to come out with an announcement. But just, you know, for people that are wondering kind of what can we look forward to, because obviously, I mean, the tributes and, you know, the thoughts and with the family and friends, I mean, that's going to continue for well into the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and again, I don't want to speak on behalf of the family, so I just want to make that clear. But from what I'm aware, right now there have been state funeral has been proposed by the government, and we're waiting to hear back from the family, essentially. Now, that's the crazy part here, because he was part of our family, but we also have to thank their family, the Lafleurs, because they shared him with us, with all of us, for the longest time. So we're going to respect their wishes, but it will be a little later. I believe it'll be in May. In the meantime, there is a memorials like in Sursaux and Montreal, etc. But we will give as much access, if again, if the family is okay with it, to have a memorial inside the Bell Center. Right now, it's outside the Bell Center. Obviously, timing was a little rough on this. And again, I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to create any excuses, but the logistics are part of it. So there will be a classic Montreal style memorial inside the Bell Center. And the funeral, we'll have to figure that out a little bit later. It comes down to the family, but I assume it'll be along the lines of what we saw for Béliveau. So, you know, because again, we're like, to me, again, the Montreal Canadiens have a glorious history, but when you have the legends among legends, he was the last of them, in my opinion. Yes, Ken Dryden's great. Yvan Cournoyer is great, but I mean, that mythical person, that person that almost seems surreal, Lafleur was the last of them. So I think the ceremony will represent that, and will try to do its best to, you know. And again, the cool part is that yes, everyone's sad, but there's almost like a happy vibe in terms of how everyone's reliving these memories. So that's what I find is so cool, is that those memories, you know, just as Dave opened the show with, like, you know, we're talking about things that happened 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, but they're going to live on forever and through generations. Like, we're hearing people talk about it to their kids, to their grandkids. Yesterday, people told me the story of, you know, oh, I got the picture from my grandfather, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's cool too. Those stories will live on through, not just the players, and you saw the influence the players were talking about, or the logo because of him, but his legacy will live on through those memories that he created for all those fans.
And Mark, I just wanted to ask you, you know, I saw, you know, you were tweeting about Guy Lafleur, obviously, yesterday, but for you personally, like, you know, what are some of your memories, especially as a kid? You know, you heard Marty St. Louis saying it yesterday, right? Habs head coach saying, like, I lost, you know, one of my heroes. And you know, I imagine, you know, he was most likely a hero for you as well.
Yeah, my first memory. Okay, so Guy Lafleur grew up in a town called, well, a village, basically, called Sursaux. It's and I grew up in Ottawa. So Sursaux is right across the there's the Ottawa River, and then you have Sursaux is right there. It's basically Quebec and Ontario are stone's throw away. And every time we'd pass by there, my father would stop and he'd bring us to the local arena, which now is called the Guy Lafleur Arena. And he'd explain to us how, again, this 3,000 person village would end up having to compete against teams like Montreal and Toronto and Winnipeg at the Quebec Pee Wee tournament, which, you know, you're talking about 3,000 versus 2 million, 3 million. And Sursaux would always win, like, by far. They dominate. And because of a young guy called Guy Lafleur, who scored, I believe, 64 goals in 3 years worth of tournaments. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that kind of, and I missed his prime. I saw the end as you guys. So that kind of reminded me that, how dominant this guy was. Just the fact that you can, like, we all know how it works with peewee hockey. The bigger populations, and obviously, you know, the ones that can convince players to come play for them, tend to win. So to me, that Sursaux, which, I mean, how many people have ever heard of that place, was dominating teams like Montreal, just goes to show the difference that Guy Lafleur makes. But every single time we saw him around the Montreal Canadiens, every single time, he would treat you like you were his drinking buddy. You know what I mean? He had time for absolutely everyone. And I try not to bug him, because, again, I feel like these guys deserve to live their lives, and they've already shared so much. But he, every single time I asked for anything, a quote or whatnot, he went above and beyond. He would show up half an hour before an interview And, you know, that and that stems from his playing days where he would show up, like he'd break into the arena in Turso. That was one of his things that he would do. So he would walk down Rue Jacques-Cartier, up the Bourget, go across the train tracks, and there were three boards by the chute where they'd get rid of the snow, right, in the arena. And those boards were loose. So one night, well, about 5 a.m, he snuck in and, you know, he gets in. It's all pipes. It's all darkness. But he smells the ice and he finally makes his way to the ice and he starts shooting or he starts skating because he doesn't want to make too much noise. And eventually he can't resist, right, because the temptation to shoot is too much, right? He loves what he's hearing. And this is 6 years old, right? Everyone's getting ready. It's Saturday morning, sleeping or getting ready to go to church. And eventually he wakes up a guy called Tspal Malosh. He used to work at the arena. And he said, like, Guy, what the hell are you doing? And he said, how did you get in here? And he said, oh, I went through the wall. He's like, oh, good. You're going through walls now. You can just like fly through walls, right? So he showed him. He said, to show me where it is, you know? And he said, oh, did you loosen those boards? And Guy was like, oh, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he made him a deal. And he said, you know, you can come here. Practice whenever you want. I'm going to show you how to turn on the lights, all the equipment. But for every hour of ice time, you give me an hour in the rink. So, you know, he thought it was charity at first, but the Tspal Malosh was saying, no, you have to work for your ice time. So it just goes to show his dedication to becoming the best. Like, you know, I can just picture that 6-year-old walking through the fog on a Saturday morning before everyone goes to and sneaking into an arena to practice, right? I don't know. To me, that kind of shows his dedication. Like, we talk about him being a good player, but man, he was dedicated to being the best. And he was a complicated person too, but he wanted to be the best at all costs. And he was just like a born winner. It comes with that certain attitude, I think. But yeah, to me, Kilafla just epitomized everything that was right with hockey. And again, he was just such a gentleman. Such, like, he'd listen to me rant and he's got enough Stanley Cup rings to have a whole handful of, you know. So I appreciate the time and how special he made everyone feel, including myself. Like, he just really, really was a man of the people. And that was important because that was a legacy that Béliveau left. So a lot of young players can learn from that. I think is the key here is taking time for everyone that supported you. And like, he really, it felt like he belonged to us. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's why everyone has like that somber, but cheering type, like celebrating his life type feeling going on, because again, he made time for everyone. Like, everyone has a picture, everyone has a story. So I don't have any particular like actual, I interacted with him a dozen times, but he was just so nice every time. That's what really struck me, was that again, it felt like we had just gone out and grabbed a couple Labatt Saint-Cons. Sorry, Molson Canadiens. I gotta represent the brand here. But yeah, and when you heard Jeff Molson talk yesterday, I think that was like, Jeff Molson's the biggest hockey fan. And I think that's what really came through, was that Guy would take pictures with absolutely everyone and he wouldn't leave until it was done. So I think that was really important. That's why he connected with not just the people in Quebec, but Canada and the world.
You know, I just wanted to say, Mark, we also, of course, like to drink Molson, but we're actually sponsored by Seagram's, right? So there's the Quebec connection there with the
there Boston you go. Family. Big fan of not, Seagram's not, myself.
Not owned by them anymore, but yeah.
I wake up every morning with a shot of Seagram's. So, you know, it works out well.
We like to hear that. Well, Marc Dumont is celebrating the life of Guy Lafleur. Marc is a special correspondent for the Montreal Canadiens, and he's one of our favorite guests. And not because of his setup, but because of what he brings each and every time he joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, Mark, we would have had you on more, but there's no more All-Canadian. The All-Canadian division is gone. We thought that was going to continue, you know, in eternity. I'm just kidding, obviously. Oh, man. But
like I'm happy it's not here. Was that not the worst? Let's be honest. Well, was that not bad?
I'll be honest with you, Mark. It was fine until the Shifley-Evans incident, and then Montreal fans have taken it to the next level in terms of their hate on.
Oh, Habs fans would never do that.
I know. Like, I'm not joking, and I want to ask you more about Guy Lafleur, but it was funny. Yeah. When Shifley got injured the night before playing in Montreal in that game against Ottawa, I can't tell you how many folks from Montreal, or not from Montreal, but Montreal fans were tweeting at me as if, A, it was, you know, an intentional act of ducking out of facing the Habs in Montreal. Like,
out of avoiding Chris Weidman. Like,
yeah, I didn't understand it either.
But zero sense.
It didn't make a lot of sense, but folks are a little passionate there.
What I found really funny was that they asked Evans, and Evans is done with this. Like, he doesn't give a crap anymore. He's like, you know, and then they asked Shifley, and he's like, no, that's fine. But like, if I have to fight, I have to fight, but whatever, I'm done with it too. And somehow it got spun into like revenge game. You know? Whereas both players are like, meh, whatever.
Pacquiao, it's the same thing, right? Like, same level. Mayweather, Pacquiao, Shifley, Evans, I think.
Yeah, but it's okay because Habs fans have united now. It's an unholy alliance with Leafs fans to mock Tim Stutzel. So it's okay. There's a new target. So it's good.
All right. Good. Well, let's keep talking about Guy Lafleur because that's a much more interesting topic. And, you know, there's not many players who could retire from the game for 3 years and then decide, oh, I'm going to come back and I'm going to play, you know, three more years. Right. So, I mean, just a remarkable player, right? 14 years with the Habs and then three more in the NHL after taking three off. So, I mean, you're right, Mark. I mean, he just had such a remarkable impact. And how is that possible? I mean, we've seen guys, obviously Mario Lemieux, probably most famously taking the time away, obviously while he was dealing with his cancer, and then came back and, you know, then played with Crosby and, you know, or, you know, came back again to play with Crosby. So Lemieux could do it. The greats can do it, but you don't see it very often. And like I said, when Lemieux did it, I'll never forget it. I loved seeing Mario Lemieux play with Sidney Crosby. That was one of the most amazing things ever in the NHL. And like I said, being able to see Guy Lafleur, I know Habs fans don't love the idea that he played for the Nordiques or he played for the Rangers, but it was interesting for people like myself who were very young, but it got a chance to really still appreciate. I mean, he was still scoring, what, like 18 goals? You know, he scored 18 goals for the Rangers and then 12 the next two seasons for the Nordiques. So, I mean, it's incredible what he was able to do after taking 3 years off.
Yeah, and oh, am I lagging a little bit? Okay, no, sorry. It's my good old Montreal internet. One of the interesting things here, Dave, is that when he originally decided to come back, I think Nedeljkovic offered him $50,000 a year to come back, and he was like, okay, guys, like, I know I said I'd take a discount, but whoa, I'm still Guy Lafleur. So they ended up, he ended up going to the Rangers that year because obviously $50,000 a year, let's be honest, that's not exactly Lafleur money. But just to show how cool he was, Dave, this is a guy, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, he released a disco album right in the middle of his career, like his prime, and it was a disco hockey like instructional album. So it was like, pass the puck, make sure you're at the blue line. So you can Google Guy Lafleur's disco album.
Okay, is that available? Like, can I purchase that?
Because you can go on YouTube right now and
Guy Lafleur's disco album. It's in French. My weekend, Mark.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious. And like, there was a big at his bar at the time. So, you know, it's funny because he always has the best quote, in my opinion. He said that Habs fans partied a lot. We partied every night. So I think there's that too, is that, again, we talk about how amazing he was on the ice, but it kind of translated. He lived life to its fullest outside the ice too. And I think a lot of fans appreciated that. But again, Dave, it's just going back to very few players. Like when Crosby scores, that's amazing. But it's that buildup that Lafleur had from his own end, you know, and watching the hair fly back. And you knew something cool was going to happen. With the Habs, there's been a few guys like Kovalev and Subban, and maybe even Caulfield have done that. But never again to the level of Guy Lafleur. It's that electricity he put in the air in the Forum. And if you guys had a chance to go to the Forum, that electricity was real. And he was a big part of that. There's that you knew something special was going to happen. And it's almost mythical now. But it was real. And at that time, it was like a legitimate, the crowd would hush and then the buzz would build and then the defenseman would clinch, you know? So yeah, to me, he's just, again, represents everything, the best of hockey in my opinion. Now, don't get me wrong. I love like a good Lyle Odelein scrap and whatnot. But, you know, when we talk about the pureness of hockey, I think Lafleur represented that very, very well.
And, you know, Mark, just final question for you here, just kind of, you know, getting off of, Guy Lafleur, and obviously, I mean, that's the main reason why we had you on, and we're going to be, you know, honoring him for sure for, as I mentioned, I think, well, in Quebec, it's going to be going for forever. I mean, he is the Montreal Canadiens. I think you would agree with that. But, you know, just talking about, you know, this last kind of stretch of the season here for the Canadiens, obviously, you know, a lot of moves were made. And I wanted to ask you kind of what the vibe is right now in terms of Habs fans and the future, because obviously the Habs are going younger and you know, a part of that is, you know, Carey Price not being younger, obviously, but him, you know, returning to the lineup after missing basically the whole season. But would you say that Habs fans are optimistic going into next year? Because obviously, you know, going to the Stanley Cup final, missing the playoffs, that's not something that I think sits well with a lot of Canadians fans. But when you consider all of the good young talent, I mean, right off the top of that list, Nick Suzuki, right? Like, are Canadians fans optimistic, you know, that this thing's going to turn around pretty quickly?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. Okay, there's always been this idea that Habs fans won't tolerate a rebuild. And I'll tell you right now, it's bullshit. Like, oh, yeah. Anyway, sorry for my
language. You're fine. But
we're not on TSN 1290 anymore.
All right, well, good. I'm gonna start swearing in French then there. You know,
Merde.
It was insulting to Habs fans to hear that. And I thought it was always an excuse. You know what I mean? Now, Habs fans won't tolerate like a Senators / like endless rebuild where nothing happens. But you already saw, like, for example, I was speaking to a security guard at the Bell Center, and the game they were losing against the Kraken, he said, I've never seen this. We're last place in the league, and the Bell Center has never been louder. It was as loud as it was at the Cup Final, you know? So, yes, I think there is a sense of optimism because of the transparency with Hughes and with Jeff Gordon, and just this idea of getting 4 first-round draft picks in the next 2 years. Like, next year is going to be bad, too, and I think that's part of the plan. Again, I'm just speaking from what I can see, and I think, obviously, they want a shot at Connor Bedard, but they've been very encouraged in that almost every move that's been made has been transparent, has been well-explained, has been a move towards the future. And here's the key, guys, is that he's been talking to these players that get traded, so the divorces aren't ugly anymore. There's a long history of players leaving Montreal with ugly divorces. This time when Ben Sherrod, Arturi Lehkonen, and Tyler Toffoli left, like, their families knew. They didn't have to learn on Twitter is basically what I'm saying here. So it's not just a sense of optimism for the future on the ice. It's a sense of optimism for the future off the ice. It feels like there's a little more of a connection with the fans as well. There's a lot more transparency. And guys like Nick Suzuki, who I think will be named the captain, in my opinion, I don't see how you don't name him a captain, right? Guys like Cole Caulfield, guys like Romanov are really, really exciting Habs fans in the sense that they're already playing well in the NHL. Then you add they have a really good prospect pool and just a ton of draft picks coming up. So the key is they have to do it right. And don't forget, Montreal's patience runs out very, very quickly. I don't know if you've ever been driving here, but like right before it goes green, like they're on the horn. They're already, you know, while it's still red, it's like, why aren't you in the intersection already? So it's a honeymoon phase. And I think they know that, but as long as they keep it open and transparent and keep making really good deals, I mean, that's important too. I think Habs fans will tolerate this, and they are excited, but they're more excited. I think they're ready for another bad year, and that's good to see, you know, because let's be honest, you need those high-end picks nowadays, right? So the Montreal Canadiens are lining up pretty well to forge a new chapter, because it's funny, we talk about Guy Lafleur and all that and Habs about the history, it's important, but they also need to, like, we need to respect our history. But now it's time to really forge a new chapter. And I think Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon have been off to a great start, in my opinion. And it's not just because I'm paid to say that, but I'm also, I am paid to say that. So,
well, Mark, we always appreciate what you bring to the table each and every time. Even though your setup leaves us with setup envy, we don't mind. Mark Dumont, a special correspondent for the Montreal Canadiens.
I wore my special 15-year-old hoodie. Okay, so this is just for you guys. This is like a hoodie that's, yeah, exactly. So
I love it, Mark. I only do zip ups. I can't wear the regular hoodies. I'm all about
the kangaroo.
I've got a whole, yeah, I love it.
I literally have nothing but hoodies. I'm in the office now and it sucks because I have to wear nice clothes, and I realize 98% of my wardrobe is hoodies.
Yeah.
But that's the way, because hoodies run for me for like 11 months a year. To me,
oh, there's no question.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All weather.
Exposed in the world. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We all agree on that. Hey, listen, guys, I really do appreciate it. Thank you very much. And we'll talk soon.
Cheers, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Dumont of the Montreal Canadiens. We'll always love Mark's insight, especially on a topic like Guy Lafleur, who he obviously, you know, covering, living, well, he grew up in Ottawa, but still, as folks can hear with his accent, he's fluent in French and very connected to what was going on in Montreal. So we always love having him on.
I mean, he's the first person I thought of, Dave, to talk about, yeah. You know, Guy Lafleur. We've had him on a legal curve. I mean, going back, I don't know, 4 or 5 years at this point, maybe longer. Used to have him on, you know, when he was with the Athletic. And, you know, just so sad that Lafleur passed away too young. And really just, again, you know, Mike Bossy and Guy Lafleur, like, again, I mean, Our generation is more, you know, Gretzky, Lemieux, Howardchuk, Solani, right?
But we, like, still knew those
my
guys,
dad, right? I mean, my dad got me into hockey. Hopefully my dad's listening right now. Hi, Dad, if you are listening. But I mean, that's who he would talk about. Guy Lafleur and Mike Bossy specifically.
And Bobby again, Clark.
Yeah, well, and Bobby Clark, because he grew up in Flin Flon. Let's not forget Reggie Leach, the Riverton Rifle, either there, Dave.
That's a good point, Ezzie.
You know, just look at the career stats. I mean, Lafleur is one of the best players of all time, and so is Bossy. But if you haven't looked at Mike Bossy, if you're a younger fan out there, or maybe just a new hockey fan, just look at Mike Bossy's stats, because, you know, if he was healthy, he probably right now has more goals than Gretzky.
Oh, I think so. I mean, he played probably half a career. What his career, if he is back, would have held up. Unfortunately, he didn't. Rob's saying hello to your dad. Thank you, Rob. We'll hope John is listening.
Appreciate it, Rob.
If he isn't, well, then maybe he catches the replay. Because remember, after the show is done, we get that podcast up right away so you can download us and listen at any time. And you know what? When you're listening and you're downloading it on, you're waiting for it to download off of Apple or however you get the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, leave us a review. Give us a rating. We appreciate that. It's always nice to see what folks have to say. We prefer it to be positive. If there's some criticism, you can always send us an email, but we accept that as well. But
yeah, it can be negative. I mean, we don't want you to hate on us, but
no, preferably about Drew. I mean, not about
anything. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if it's negative about us, no, but if it's negative about Drew, I mean, that's what we're going to do for the last 15 minutes of the show, right? Dave is just
Drew.
Yeah,
we're absolutely. So we're going to head to our final commercial break of our Saturday morning. We thank you. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Dave Minuk. He's Ezzie Ginsberg. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Final segment. Dave and Ezzie's looking down though, so I feel like he's not paying attention to me right now. There we go.
Well, I just got a text from Naomi saying that we have water in our basement here in River Heights. So, that kind of sucks.
Well, that does suck. You know, I think everybody's going to have a lot of water in their basement, unfortunately, based on the monsoon we've got out of the
snow. I don't know. I don't know. I can't tell if it's raining outside, Dave, right now. But like this morning, it was pouring. My backyard is basically like a lake.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of water. It's
a small lake. I don't have a massive backyard. Let me clarify that. It's not as big as Dave's. There's no moat, but a lot of water.
Yeah, the moat doesn't keep you out though, unfortunately. So it's not super effective. It does allow me to keep some fish in there though, which is kind of nice. Anyway, so we've got the final four games coming up. There's another Illegal Curve post-game show coming your way. It'll be a three-headed monster tomorrow. Drew is back. So it'll be you, Drew, and I doing the Illegal Curve post-game show following tomorrow. I guess they play Colorado.
And I guess we should officially, you know, say happy 10th anniversary to Drew and Laura, mainly to Laura, though.
Yeah.
I mean, just for...
For
putting up with Drew for all of these years. So, no, we're joking, obviously. Was there back in 2012 at the wedding in Kentucky. And all I have to say to Drew and Laura is may you be blessed with wisdom.
Wow. Very nice, Ezzie.
That was my line at the wedding.
Those were some wise words.
Except it wasn't spelled right, and it was spelled W-I-S-C-O-M. So I told Drew and Laura that, you know, somebody made a typo, being the journalism grad that I am. So I didn't say the wrong line. Luckily, I caught it and realized that, you know, wisdom's not a word. So, I corrected that. But that was my line that I said at the wedding.
Wow.
And they asked me to say it because I'm a wise old sage.
Either that or they set you up to say something funny. They were trying to set you up, Big Daddy. Anyways.
Oh, yeah. They were trying to end my career at weddings.
Oh, someone saw Drew at a restaurant last night. NRG 21. Saw Drew at a restaurant. Drew was hobnobbing. All right. Well, hopefully Drew was polite.
Okay, NRG, we need to know what Drew ate because it was obviously a lot. There was probably, a steak, shrimp scampi.
Yeah, what was on the menu for
him? We need to know what Drew was eating. What was he drinking? What was he wearing? I hope he had a shirt on.
Anyways, so as a final segment here on today's Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, it is the final segment because I'm going to have to go home and get that water out of my basement. Yeah, so hopefully my shop vac is running.
Yeah, but look, I mean, what are you expecting here? The Jets have four games left. We talked about it with Kenny Wiebe.
Well, I don't think the Jets are going to make the playoffs, Dave.
They are not going to make the playoffs. That is a very astute observation. That's why folks come to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and the Illegal Curve Postgame Show for analysis like no other that you can get nowhere else. Like as he just dropped on you, the Jets will not be making the playoffs. So four games left. You know, do you think that there will be guys that are going to be sitting down? Do you think Eric Comrie plays half the starts? I know Connor Hellebuck is sitting on 199 wins, so he's looking for a milestone win. I suspect once he gets that, he'll be... They'll allow Eric Comrie to go, so we'll see what happens. Maybe Hellebuck goes tomorrow against Colorado, but I don't know. What are you expecting from the final four games? I mean, Blake Wheeler said he wants to at least put on a decent performance for the fans. Let them, you know, they know that they're paying for their for these games. Like, what do you think we're going to see for the next four Jets games?
I think you just nailed it right there, Dave. Like, I mean, because the Jets aren't going to the playoffs, everybody knows these games are meaningless. So really, that's all you can do as a group. All the players can do is, you know, give their fans something to cheer about, right? So, I mean, you know, we saw, what was that, 2 weeks ago now? Just over 2 weeks ago, it was the Friday night, right? The Jets Avalanche game, and, you know, the Jets tied it up late. I mean, we talked about it. That was one of the best performances that we've seen from the Jets. Maybe,
by the way, breaking news, your wife just chimed into the chat saying the shop vac is all fired up, the fan is blowing. So in case anybody's wondering about Ezzy's water in his basement, Naomi just gave us an update. That's what we call breaking news.
Well, I was just texting with Naomi, so I'm not sure why she, you know, I'm glad she's watching and she's in the chat, but you could have texted me that, Naomi, but that's good to know. I love you, honey. So we'll see you soon. And it's going to be a miserable afternoon because there's going to be water all over our basement, but that's okay. I'll put my rubber boots on. But yeah, Dave, that's all you can really, you know, hope for as a Jets fan is that you get some entertaining games here. And, you know, there's still going to be, you know, a lot of fans at these games. And we know that the Avalanche are one of the best teams in the NHL. They might eventually win the Stanley Cup, or at the very least, I think most people are expecting the Avalanche to go on a run. So it's, yeah, it's an opportunity. Just at the end of the day, like, it's entertainment, and it's especially going to be entertainment when the games don't have meaning, right? Like, the Jets aren't chasing a playoff spot anymore. Mm-hmm. A big one here is for sure Kyle Connor going for 50 goals, right? Yeah. You've been talking about this all year long, right? Mr. Even Steven, 44-44, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, four games left, and, you know, can Kyle Connor do it? Of course he can absolutely do it. I said this on last week's show. It really sucks that he missed those three games when he was in COVID protocol, because most likely he'd be at, you know, 46, 47, something like that, right, Dave?
Yeah.
So I think that's something that, you know, I think Jets fans are going to be rooting for Kyle Connor. Not going to be easy, but that's just, you know, another thing that Jets fans have to look forward to, you know, Connor chasing 50 goals. Weber mentioned it, you know, when we had him on about an hour ago. There's a good chance Kyle Connor is going to be, you know, a Lady Bing finalist and maybe even a Lady Bing winner. So I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking, you know, forward to watching, you know, Dylan Sandberg and his, you know, continued strong play. You know, he had a couple of rough games there and he was a healthy scratch, but I think fans are going to, you know, right now he's one of those players, Dave, that's under the microscope, as you know, right? Because Jets fans know, you know, he's a big part of the future on the Jets defense on that left side. So, you know, I think in a way it was good that the Jets were officially eliminated on this road trip, because we've been talking about this, joking about this for about a month now. The Jets have been out of it for a while now. I mean, if you actually thought that the Jets were going to win out and the Dallas Stars were going to lose out, or, you know, Vegas losing out, I mean, that just wasn't going to happen. So I think you're just looking forward to, you know, watching Kyle Connor go for 50, you know, seeing how, you know, Dylan Sandberg does in some of these games coming up, right? Against the Avalanche, who are a stacked team. I mean, the Philadelphia game and the Seattle game, those are going to be a little bit more, you know, a little more difficult to watch if you're Jets fans. But when you're talking about Calgary and Colorado and the Calgary games on a Friday night, right? So I think, you know, that one will have a little bit more importance, being a Canadian team and the Flames.
They may be resting guys, though. That's the only thing, right? So you may have.
They could be, but they're not going to rest everybody, right? Like, they.
No, they wouldn't rest everyone. But
I mean, I think, you know, Jets fans are probably, you know, really looking forward to watching. Matthew Tkachuk is having just an incredible season. It's unbelievable. 40 goals, 100 points. Johnny Gaudreau, I don't know if he ends up winning the Hart Trophy, because there's a guy by the name of Austin Matthews that's having a pretty good season. Igor Shesterkin's in the conversation as well. But at the very least, you know, Johnny Gaudreau has reestablished himself as a top 10 forward in the NHL, right? So the Flames and Avalanche games, I think, will probably be a little bit more fun to watch, just because those are better teams than obviously the Kraken and the Flyers. But, I mean, you got to put on a good show for your fans, Dave, because as you mentioned, I mean, fans pay, you know, top dollar, unless they the tickets, you know, given to them by a friend or a family member. But, I mean, I think that's what you're doing if you're the Jets. That's what you're saying in the dressing room. You're saying, let's put on a good show for our fans, because that's the least that we can do for them.
Yeah, and I think it's 100% true. And look, you know, the truth is you're going to have to engage these same folks. I mean, this is going to be an incredibly, incredibly important, perhaps the most important offseason in the history of the Jets 2.0, because there is a lot of discontent. It is the summer of discontent, potentially, here in Winnipeg. Or was it the winter of discontent? Regardless, there's some discontent.
I thought it was a hot girl summer.
It's something. But the point is that it, you know, there's a lot of angst because from and I'm talking about from an organizational perspective, because I don't know if you've noticed, there's a lot of commercials advertising Jets season tickets. I don't remember seeing that a lot. So now you're seeing that.
You definitely didn't see, you didn't see that 2 or 3 years ago.
That's right. So you didn't see 2 or 3 years ago. And look, I'm happy. I think the best thing that ever could happen to this market is that the organization doesn't take it for granted. Doesn't take it for granted that people are going to turn over their, look, we just came through, we're not done yet, but coming through a pandemic, the economy took a major hit. Folks don't have the same disposable income that they had 2 years ago, 3 years ago. They're going to be a little bit more careful in terms of how they spend it with their discretionary spending for a reason, right? And so if you're going to spend it on a hockey game, at the least you want to be entertained. And I think there's like I said, from an off-ice perspective, from what they do, just from a fan perspective in terms of keeping folks engaged. That's why I said it's not just an audit of what's happening on the ice. It is everywhere throughout the organization that they're going to have to examine because – like I said, at the end of the day, if you alienate your fan base, if you piss too many people off and they're not coming to games anymore, well, again, like I said, it's great that the franchise value has gone from $150 million of what you paid for it to $450 million. You know, my house has increased in value from what I paid for it to what it is worth now. I don't actually have that income until I sell this house. It's the same goes for the franchise. They don't have that money until they actually sell the franchise. So you still need those fans to be paying the dollars.
Didn't Elon Musk try to buy the Jets?
No, he tried to buy my house though. And so I was like, I said that to Elon. I'm like, I'm only going to sell you 51% of it. I'll retain 49%. So look, I just think it's a much like, you know what? It's funny. It's like something as simple as when the Jets first came back for the first, I want to say 6 years, season ticket holders would get like a little package in the mail. It was nothing. It was a little package, had a little pin in it, had like a little, you know, it was just a memento. The point is you got something, you know, it was a little bit of recognition. Like you're committed to the franchise. We're committed to you. Then they went away from that. And they went, like, I was thinking to myself, like, you know, that cost you, you know, maybe 75 grand to do that entire thing. I'm ballparking and probably with the wrong number. The point is they would do something like that. And it gave their season ticket holders something. Again, nothing significant, but it was like a little memento to say, you know, thanks for being a season ticket holder. Here you go. They went away from that. In the last few years, there's nothing. And like I said, I don't think you can have that sort of attitude. You know, when we talk to, and we do it, we don't do it as much as we used to, but when we talk to writers from other markets, you hear about it. I remember talking to someone in Nashville. I know Nashville is different than Winnipeg, right? But Nashville, they gave their season ticket holders a jersey with like their information that they could go up and they wouldn't even need a credit card. They could just tag the jersey. So I know that the organization is trying to get back to that. I just think that that's part of what their analysis is going to have to be is how do they re-engage with the fan base to create a good atmosphere in the arena? Because
there has to be signs that, you know, this ownership group is committed to winning. Not saying that they're not, but they have to reevaluate, you know, how they've been operating. And, you know, I think it is going to start with changes on the coaching staff. Again, we don't know, Dave. Like, is it going to be all the coaches? But you can't have that type of year and expect to go and then go back to the fans who are paying money for tickets. And as you mentioned, when it comes to season ticket holders, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars. Right. And the economic picture definitely has changed since early 2020. So I think, you know, it starts with the coaching staff, but there's also going to have to be a long look at, you know, personnel and, you know, where are we strong? Where are we weak? You know, are we going to move a franchise player like Mark Scheifele? And he has been a franchise player, right? Drafted 7th overall in 2011, the Jets 2.0 first draft pick. I mean, part of the leadership group. I personally don't think Blake Wheeler is going anywhere. But I think Mark Scheifele is a guy that, you know, you have to say, okay, like, you know, are we going to move on from this guy? Like, what can we get for him? You have to look at everything. And yeah, when you're talking about, you know, the relationship between season ticket holders and the team and, you know, the fan experience, I think, you know, this is not a situation where the Jets are going to rebuild, even though, you know, Dave, I hate that word, you know, rebuild versus retool. But I think, you know, the Jets, unless, you know, someone proves me wrong, I strongly believe that this, the ownership group for the Jets and the management group for the Jets, for that matter, are committed to winning, and they want to get this back on the right track, and they want to make moves in the offseason that's going to allow them to get back in the playoffs. I'm not saying that, you know, the Jets are going to be able to, you know, turn this around to the point where they win the Stanley Cup. But look what the Calgary Flames have done, right? Not many people were, you know, picking the Calgary Flames to win the division, the Pacific Division, before the season started, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. And I think you would agree they're probably the second best team in the Western Conference right now heading into the playoffs after the Colorado Avalanche, right? So the Flames turned it around. Obviously, acquiring Jacob Markstrom and solidifying the goaltending position had a lot to do with that. But all I'm saying is, I mean, you bring in the right coach, you know, you make a few moves on the back end, you know, maybe, you know, a guy like Mark Scheifele gets moved. But I think the point is that, you know, when you have, you know, a lot of players under really team friendly contracts, right? Kyle Connor, you know, Nick Ehlers, Connor mm-hmm. Hellebuyck. I mean, I think you got to retool. If that's the word that you want to use, you at the very least have to get back into the playoffs next year, at the very least. I mean, you want to go and you want to go on a run. But this isn't a team that's, you know, you're not going to go young and you're not going to, you know, trade some veteran players for draft picks. You got to get this back on the right track. You got to put yourself back into a situation where you're at the very least a playoff team and, you know, competing for that Stanley Cup.
That's a good way to end today's show, Ezzy. So that's exactly how we're going to do it. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, which is made possible from all of the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make this show and our post-game show and the website a possibility. Those sponsors are Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park. Support those fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. So as the time has flown by, I want to thank everyone for spending their Saturday morning with you and I on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We enjoy it each and every time.
Hopefully you don't have water in your basement.
Hopefully, unlike Ezzy, you don't have to go home or you're probably at home maybe listening to the show or watching the show.
I feel like everybody is checking their sump pumps in Winnipeg right now.
Yeah, they might be. They might be if they have the luxury of sump pump. Not everybody has a fancy sump pump like you. But the point is,
I don't have that. I have Reebok pumps, though.
Oh, there you go. You can pump up. Well, Naomi probably has those preset. So when you get home, you can get right into the basement.
Remember the Reebok pump skates, Dave?
I don't remember the skates. I remember the shoes.
I think they were tacks. They may have been CCM tacks where you could pump up your skates.
Yeah, I think vague recollection. I'm not a huge, I don't remember it too significantly, but I definitely remember the shoes. There's no question about it.
I feel like you're more of an Adidas guy. Puma?
Maybe New Balance. I don't know.
Yeah, New Balance is a good shoe.
Yeah, good shoe. I like the hue of that shoe. Anywho, we thank you for joining us on today's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Dave Minuk. That's Ezra Ginsberg. Have a great rest of your Saturday, and we will see you tomorrow on the Illegal Curve postgame show.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.